You are listening to Lighthearted, the official podcast of the United States Lighthouse Society. My name is Jeremy Dodtremont. Welcome. Today is March 24th, 2024. A lot of 24s in there. And this is episode 270 of Lighthearted. Today's episode is something completely different, to paraphrase Monty Python. There's no co-host, and I am going to dive right in with my guests today. I have two guests, Emily Strait and Vince Bailey, are the hosts of the podcast, The Lighthouse Lowdown. Let me just tell you a little bit about them first. Emily is a nautical-loving lighthouse enthusiast who is excited to spread the word of wicked sea sentinel stories. And I think that's wicked in the positive sense. Yeah. I'm from the Boston area, so I'm used to wicked being used that way. She is a chemical engineer and a stained glass artist on the side. Vince is a mechanical engineer and Emily's partner in crime. So hi, Emily and Vince. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
This is great. You know, I've been listening to your podcast lately. Let me congratulate you on your podcast. By my count, there are three podcasts in the world completely devoted to lighthouses. There's yours. There's mine that I do for the U.S. Lighthouse Society. And there's a podcast that's being done by the Association of Lighthouse Keepers in the U.K., hosted by Edward Peppett, who I'm actually going to interview pretty soon. I don't know if you're aware of that one. He's interviewed ex-lighthouse keepers and so forth. It's a really good podcast. So they're all a bit different. There's plenty of room for all three of them. But I was excited to see that you're doing this. The style is quite different from mine, as we'll talk about. If I'm correct, you launched your podcast in April last year. You've done almost 50 episodes at this point. Is that correct? Or
yeah,
no?
It was 2022, I think, in April that we started. So now it's been nearly 2 years since we.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you're good.
Still I was looking back and I thought it was last year. So you do a new episode every 2 weeks, do
you? Yes. Yep. Yeah.
So I was actually surprised to see when I was looking up your bios where you guys are located. Tell us where you are.
Oh, yeah. We're in Kansas City, Missouri, which is very close, about 45 minutes away from smack dab in the middle of the United States. So yeah.
Can't help but say no coast, USA.
Yeah, no coast.
Yeah. Yeah. So people might be a bit surprised that you're a lighthouse enthusiast living in the smack dab middle of the country. By the way, I visited Kansas City once in my life. And just to date myself a little bit, it was in 1980. When yeah. I was did a trip around the country by myself by Greyhound bus.
Oh my gosh.
Nice. And a couple of days in Kansas City, I remember having a bad cold when I was there, but I remember how nice everybody was. That's the thing that really stands out in my memory. Of course, that was more than 40 years ago. I don't know if people are still nice there.
They're holding on to it. They do a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Yeah. That Midwestern friendliness for sure. So you're in the middle of the country. Have you visited lighthouses?
We have. I've been to, I think a total of 8, and that includes a couple that are international. Vince has been to the Outer Banks. I think we went together 2022.
Yeah, 2022. Yeah. We went on a trip out there. And then a couple others kind of just, I guess, as most people probably go casually before that. But yeah, I'd had a couple experiences with my family just driving by and spending a little bit of time. Yeah, most of our since the podcast kicked off, you know, the attention and what we've been able to learn from the community has really changed the interest level. So
I would think, yeah, well, that can happen. You got to be careful. I always said the lighthouse bug is a good contagious disease, and it'll take over your life if you're not careful. Believe me, I know how that goes. Let me just ask a little bit more about your backgrounds. You both work for the same company. Is that correct?
Yes, we do. Yeah. Engineering consulting company here in Kansas City.
Uh-huh. And are you a couple?
Yes.
Yes,
you are. Okay. That wasn't clear to me. So I just wanted to, not that it's any of my business or anything, but just curious.
No, we're happy to answer. We've been dating coming up on 3 years. So we know each other pretty well.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So. That's great. Well, it comes off, your rapport really comes off in the podcast as well.
Yeah. I kind of roped him into this. He was originally not going to be like the permanent co-host of the podcast. But the first person to do a podcast episode with me was my twin sister. And friends and family, after I posted it, were like, you know, it's good. It's just that you guys have the same voice, so we can't tell who's talking.
Sounds like she's talking to herself. No.
Yeah, actually, I listened to some of that once. I was wondering, I was going to ask you if there's that a friend or whatever. But yeah, your voices are pretty similar.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, like, you can maybe force Vince to fill in as co-host, but he's so good at it and we get along really well on the podcast. So he just became permanent co-host.
Well, and it's worked out. Is your sister ever on the podcast anymore?
No, it was a little too stressful for her, I think, whenever she did it the first time. So.
Uh-huh. It can be that way a little bit, but you tend to get used to it over time. Definitely. Yeah, yeah. So, Emily, also in your bio, it says you do stained glass work.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. So my interest in nautical things and stained glass happened kind of at the same time where it was like Facebook Marketplace or something. When I was in college, someone made a stained glass sailboat and I just thought it was the coolest thing ever. And so then I started to decorate my apartment based around that. So lots of sailboats everywhere. When Vince and I started dating, he came into my apartment and it's just like covered in seashells and boats.
Very nautical.
Lighthouses?
Yeah, just a little. Yeah, the lighthouses came after that. And I can't really pinpoint the time when the lighthouses came like into the picture. I'm not really sure. I don't know if you remember.
Well, yeah, my origin with it was you had your idea to do the podcast based on research on going on a trip. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what are we going to do on this trip? I think it was the Outer Banks is where you had started.
Yeah.
With the whole nautical theme. And it's an awesome spot, of course. So I know she researched some of the lighthouses there and then it turned into, well, let's have a conversation about it after her and her sister had a, you know, quick conversation. I was asked to be a different voice.
Yeah.
And then I got pulled in as well. But yeah, she had her whole apartment set up.
Yeah, it was nautical. Some point between us meeting and going to Outer Banks where I was thinking as I was researching for the Outer Banks trip, I was like, wouldn't it be nice? Because I hadn't heard of Lighthearted yet. And I was like, wouldn't it be nice if there was a podcast that I could listen to like all the research about lighthouses so that while I'm working, I can just have it on in the background. And that's how we started doing this podcast.
Well, it's kind of part of why I started too. I thought, well, there's nobody doing a lighthouse podcast. It's completely devoted to lighthouses. There's certainly been podcasts that might have an episode here and there, sometimes to do with lighthouse ghost stories mm-hmm. or whatever it might be, but not entirely devoted to lighthouses. So you've been to the Outer Banks, Emily, and you know, I didn't get there until just a few months ago, believe it or not, for the first time. And it's one of the lighthouse meccas of the country. Yeah. What were your impressions there? Of course, Cape Hatteras is certainly one of the most famous lighthouses anywhere. Was it open when you were there? Because I was there when it was closed because of work going on.
It was open. It was, so unfortunately, 2 weeks before our trip, I had broken my foot. And so the trip was highly altered for what our original plans were. So we didn't get to climb it, but it was open. I remember they were doing renovations before that, I think, if I remember correctly. And then it was by the time that we came around. So we didn't get to climb it. It was kind of a bummer, but we still had a great time seeing all the lighthouses. And especially over there, one thing we talk about all the time is how nice people are over at the Outer Banks.
And yes,
it was just a great experience all around.
Well, coming from Kansas City, if you thought people are nice in North Carolina, that's saying something. You're famous for niceness. So let me ask you, do either or both of you have any experience with podcasting or radio or anything like that before you did this?
No, this is we just picked it up. And
yeah, we barely talk at all. We're engineers. So, you know.
I laughed so much my headset fell off here. Yeah. That's funny. You both have really good voices.
Oh, thanks.
I can't be the first one to tell you that. You have radio voices, which is a compliment. You really.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, it's all the tech. Yeah.
Our friends and family tell us that, but they are supposed to say nice things.
Well, so, and speaking of that, your podcast sounds very, very professional and you're speaking to me with very professional looking microphones. Do you have any tips for aspiring podcasters as far as that goes? Did you find some online resources or just kind of piece things together to do that?
We kind of pieced it together, but the microphones and like the microphone arms that we use just came in like a all-in-one package off of Amazon. So that was pretty nice. It was like $50 for each set. So as someone starting out and, you know, you don't really know what's good or how,
right,
how like low level should you start when you're just starting a podcast, but these have hung on with us the entire time, and they work really well.
Yeah. So I got really interested. I read a short paper on acoustics and acoustic design. We have, so we rent a house. We don't live here. And behind me is a moving blanket. And this area we record in is called the Rip Rap Studio. And it's, we had to find a way to come up with the sound treatment with very little money and no permanent fixtures to the room, or the walls, or the ceiling. So I had a lot of fun with that. But our biggest jump, I think we had a nice, I don't even know what this is called, processor.
Interface.
Thank you. And the interface really was kind of a jump, but everything else has been riprap, you know, put it together, and it's been great. So we've been very lucky.
Yeah. And our first interface was also off of Amazon, lasted us a while. And we actually took it with us to the Outer Banks to do some recordings in front of the lighthouses that we visited. But we have a really nice one now. We have Rodecaster Pro is the one that we use, and it's a lot more expensive, but it's really, really good.
I had an interface, but it blew out in a power surge one time.
So oh, no.
I have a Sennheiser microphone that I'm using right now, and I find that it works pretty well. I have a mobile kit that I use when I go to interview somebody in person with some decent mics and a little, what do you call it, is a Zoom, nothing to do with the app Zoom that we're using right now, but a Zoom recorder. I don't know if you're familiar with those.
Oh,
is it H4N? I could be remembering that wrong, but it's a great little recorder. And if you ever do, you know, go travel around to record on location, if you want to ask me what that recorder is, I'll give you the more information. But it's really, really served me well. So the content of your podcast, as I was saying before, is quite different from mine. I usually have guests that I interview and so forth. And we get pretty in depth, probably too much so in a lot of cases, where, you know, my podcast is often half an hour to an hour, and most of it is the guest getting really in depth, whether it's an individual lighthouse or a book they've written or whatever it might be. Yours is more conversational. Could you say a little bit more about the format and what made you decide to do it that way?
Yeah, so it definitely goes back to when we were trying to look up the Outer Banks lighthouses and just learn a little bit about them before we went and visited. So I kind of based around the layout of each podcast episode around that, just kind of like, what's the history, like any big stories in its past? What does it look like? What are current events? Like, if you go and visit, what will you see? Is it a museum? You know, all of those kind of questions where I would ask before I went to go and see it. That's kind of what we base it around. So each episode is just covering one lighthouse. And sometimes we do fun episodes like Christmas episodes or like spooky lighthouse episodes, but mainly we base it around just having one specific lighthouse per episode that like listeners sometimes send in one that they grew up around and they want to hear more about it, or that they saw on a vacation, like, oh, I saw this one, I kind of want to hear about it. So that's kind of what we base it on.
Yeah, as we've come to learn a little bit more about lighthouses, technology, history, stories, I think that our audience has been able to come along for that journey. And so it's an entry-level experience. If someone randomly stumbled upon one of our episodes, I think they would be able to enjoy it. And if somebody is subscribing and they want to listen to every episode, I think they'd be able to follow kind of patch for patch as well. So we like that. It's very easy to get into, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you. It does draw you into it because it comes through that you guys are, you know, you want to learn as you're doing it, and that you are kind of sharing that process with the listeners, which as you said, that's really, really nice. And I just admire the way your podcast is so conversational, because again, mine is so different. From the start, I've kind of been trying to go more in that direction. I think I've learned to do interviews better. So when I listen to the early ones now, I feel like I was very stiff, and now it's more conversational. I'm talking with people. So, but you're starting kind of from that end of things. Mm-hmm. I think you have done interviews, right?
Yes, we've done a couple.
Yeah,
right. Are you thinking of doing more of that, or
maybe
occasionally?
Yeah, we sprinkle it in here and there just when it's something relevant, or usually we wait for something to kind of fall into our laps. Like we did a Marquette Harbor paranormal episode where we interviewed someone who does paranormal tours at the lighthouse. And that one was really cool. And it just kind of happened because they were picking up paranormal tours because Halloween was coming up. And I was like, oh, we should do that, you know, kind of. So just things that kind of happen instead of us seeking them out. So just every once in a while we'll have one in there, but
Yeah, for me, I think the dream with interviews would be to travel, of course.
Yeah.
And meet people where they're at, whether it's a project they're working on or a story they have in their local culture. It seems like every lighthouse, especially the folks that we talk to in other places, has its own local focus and culture and history. So the, you know, ideally we'd be sitting across the table, we'd bring our microphones along and can get that worked out. But for now, I think that's probably our biggest challenge, being where we are and being who we are as a couple of young folks trying to figure out how to travel to these places. And we have some great connections in different places in the lighthouse community, but it's a long list and we don't vacation too often. So it's going to be a fun journey.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if you come to New England, let me know and I know people. So
I'd love to. It'd be great.
I'd be more than happy to help. You're absolutely right. You know, my favorite thing is when I get to travel and interview people in person. And I, you know, usually I do the interviews remotely with Zoom or other ways, but I love it when I get to travel and sit across the table, as you said, from people. In a couple, actually, I'm going to Washington State this coming week and I'm doing a couple interviews there. I'm going for other reasons as well. But in May, I'm going to take 2 weeks driving down the coast of New Jersey, down Delaware into Maryland. And I've got at least a dozen interviews lined up.
Wow. Awesome.
Nice. So almost every day.
Washington State.
I'm sorry. Do you say why?
Yeah. No, where are you going there? I'm sorry.
Where? Well, the U.S. Lighthouse Society is based in Hansville, Washington. Not far from Seattle on Puget Sound, and the Point Lighthouse, as you may have, I think you talked about in the episode on.
Yeah.
So I'm going there. There's a board meeting going on. I'm not on the board, but I'm the historian for the society, so I'm taking part in the meetings. But I'll have two or three free days while I'm there. So I'm actually going to drive out to the Olympic Peninsula, go all the way to the northwest tip of the U.S., and look out and see Cape Flattery Lighthouse from there, among other things. Sounds like, do you have a connection with Washington State?
That is some of the areas I've been to. My grandfather was from Port Angeles, which is up there. So we drove, after he passed away, which has been probably 10 years, we drove the area and the whole peninsula as a family and spread his ashes up there. And it was a great trip. That was most of my time that I got to spend up there. Visiting that area. So it's awesome.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it. I've been to the USLHS headquarters 3 or 4 times already. I was there last year, but I haven't had that kind of free time to drive out in that direction at all. So I'm really, really looking forward to it. Well, you already said how you choose the lighthouses to be in your podcast. Is it often listeners or friends suggesting different lighthouses, that kind of thing?
Yeah, lots of suggestions. And sometimes if I'm stumped for one, I'll just kind of type in like, list of tallest lighthouses and then go through the list, kind of look at all of them, see which ones have cool stories and pick one from that. But lately, especially in the past year or so, almost all of them have been suggestions from our listeners. So.
Mm-hmm. I'm really lucky too. Emily leads and does research for almost all of the episodes. I'm once in a while myself, but
25%.
One of my favorite things to do is to hear about a movie recommendation or a song. Someone says, hey, you'd enjoy this. And I don't want to know anything else about it. No commercial, no, you know, searching the web. And then I just get to expose myself to that and really enjoy it. And that's how our episodes are. I don't know what we're talking about at all until we're already recording.
Mm-hmm.
And Emily gets to tell me the story and I make my jargon and drink my coffee. We have a great time.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Kind of reminds me of something in my experience. I've taken part quite a few times in actual paranormal investigations at lighthouses.
Oh.
And we've mentioned that already, that a lot of them have ghost stories and so forth. And often there are, you know, I know a lot of people don't believe in any of this, but I have an open mind about it. And they're often with these paranormal investigation groups, there'll be a psychic, somebody who supposedly picks up on these things. And usually they don't want to know anything going into the place. That makes it much more interesting if they come up with, you know, pertinent observations. Mm-hmm. You know, it has more validity if they haven't studied up on the place ahead of time. So it's a little bit, I don't know if you're psychic or not, but it's,
I don't think so.
You ever guess what the lighthouse is before she tells you? No,
I think maybe once or twice, but I got some context clues.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So tell me, what is a history buoy?
Oh my gosh.
You talk about that, but I'm not quite sure I understand what it is.
Yeah, it's just a random, like, it doesn't even have any basis in anything. I can't even remember which episode it was that I started doing that. It might have been the third one, which is the first time we actually covered a single lighthouse in depth. But it's just anything that we feel like covering. Like, sometimes episodes will have, well, a mention of some, like, structural thing or, you know, I don't know, like one time I covered how sea glass occurs, like just little things like that, where if we may mention it in an episode, like one we really need to cover is clockwork mechanisms. Like, how do those work? How did they?
Yeah, lightning rods.
Them? Yeah, you know, he did lightning rods. We see them on
every lighthouse. And
we cover ships, or we covered riprap and just all kinds of little random things that may pop up and we're like, oh, that'd be cute. Sometimes they're really short. Sometimes they're super long. And but yeah, like types of Fresnel lenses, we did that, and light characteristics. So just things that pop up, we like to cover them and hopefully shed some light on it without having to cover it every single episode.
Basically a fun fact, right? Yeah. You start off the episode and hey, here's this thing.
Shed some light on it. I like that. Yeah. Huh. Yeah, there's so many kind of tangential things related to lighthouses. Fresnel lenses are really central to it all, of course, and very interesting and beautiful. But as you mentioned, clockworks and things like that. And I just did an interview on Chelsea Clocks. The Chelsea Clock Company near Boston produced the clocks used by the Lighthouse Service for many years. So that was interesting. It's, you know, sort of almost trivia in a way, but it actually was pretty important to lighthouse keepers for many years. So there's so many aspects to it. That's what's so great about lighthouses. It's like, I think of it as like a window into history and into all, you know, technology and navigation and all that stuff. So it's all good. So I listened to your episode about the U.S. Lighthouse Society. Actually, you said USLHS, and you kind of started with the Lighthouse Service and the Lighthouse Establishment and all that. But then you got into the U.S. Lighthouse Society, which has no direct relationship to those governmental agencies, but has the same initials, USLHS, which I've been part of for quite a while. You did a really nice job with that show. Since you're talking to the historian for the U.S. Lighthouse Society, do you have any questions about the society I might be able to answer?
I would like to say thank you. I mean, the work that you do probably throughout your career has inspired us, and it's been able to allow us to have access to the information and stories and a lot of the content that we have here on the podcast for our listeners. So I don't have a direct question, but that's the first thing that comes to my mind is thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. And that's what it's all about. It's about sharing. That's why I'm talking to you today, basically, is that I think we can all help each other in various ways. And our listeners should listen to both podcasts.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
I have a question. What is your job like working as a historian?
First of all, I live on the opposite coast from where the U.S. Lighthouse Society is based. Yeah. Of course, the society is based in Washington State, and I'm out here in New Hampshire. I do occasionally go over there, as I'm going to be next week, but I'm in constant contact with people, with Jeff Gales, the director, and other people out there. When I was hired, I always say, you know, I'm around the age or slightly past when a lot of people retire from their jobs. And I started working with the U.S. Lighthouse Society. It's just about 5 years ago now. And I always tell people I found my dream job at retirement age. But I've been doing lighthouse stuff of one kind or another for almost 40 years. And I feel very lucky to have this job. I really, really do. When I was hired, it was mostly to supervise the research catalog. I think you've probably seen that. It's archives.uslhs.org. And it's information about every lighthouse in the country and a lot of old pictures and so forth. We're constantly gathering more stuff. We have it's kind of behind the scenes digital archive, and that's always being culled, and some of it's being put in the research catalog, and we're always looking for more. So hopefully that's useful to a lot of people. But soon after I started the position, I said to Jeff, the director, I said, why don't we do a lighthouse podcast? And he said, that's a great idea. So I wasn't hired to do that, but that became the thing that actually takes up more of my time than anything else that I do. But I also we do live Zoom events sometimes. We just did one on Saturday. So we do those pretty often. I also help to lead some of the tours. U.S. Lighthouse Society does tours all over the world. I've gotten to go to England and Scotland and Ireland. I went to Ireland almost 2 years ago for almost a month, which was fantastic. I'm leading a Maine tour in the fall. So those are some of the things I do. So it's hard to say what it's like because I do so many varied things. I get a lot of questions forwarded to me that have to do with lighthouse history. If somebody writes to the general, you know, email address, those tend to get forwarded to me. Sometimes I know the answers. Often I don't, especially if they're more technical. I'm not a expert on the technical history of lighthouses, but we have people who are. Tom Tagg is the technical consultant for the society, and he, anything to do with lenses or illuminance or any of that stuff, he's the guy to go to. So I'm lucky to have these resources and a whole bunch of people I know who are very, very knowledgeable. So, you know, I've been doing it long enough that I know the people to go to. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a good question, but it's hard to answer in just a few words.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, we just recently covered partially the January storms in Maine on the 10th and 13th. And as I was researching that, I saw your name pop up as like a volunteer, and then there's photos that say your name at the bottom. So you're like, is that something that you started when you joined the USLHS?
No, that's separate. The local lighthouse, Portsmouth Harbor Lighthouse, people can't see, but on Zoom, I have Portsmouth Harbor Lighthouse up as my background behind me, which is 10 minutes from my home here. And I was involved with an organization called the American Lighthouse Foundation, no connection to the U.S. Lighthouse Society. I got involved in the 90s, and I served as the president for about 10 years until recently. And I started the local chapter here, Friends of Portsmouth Harbor Lighthouses. We take care of Portsmouth Harbor Lighthouse and also Whaleback Lighthouse, that's just over the border with in Maine, in Kittery, Maine, out in the Granite Tower, out in the water. So I still volunteer for the local chapter. I don't have a title anymore, but I still volunteer. So that's why I was interviewed in some of those articles. I started the group 23 years ago,
wow.
The chapter. So yeah, it's been pretty rough lately. And we just had another storm, including very high tides yesterday and this morning, that did more damage to the base of Portsmouth Harbor Lighthouse. So it's a big, big problem, very much on my mind as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully soon on the podcast, we'll be able to report that repairs have been done. It's in the works, and okay, we know we can't wait too long. So. So that was neat that you saw those articles out there. So Emily, also in the episode about the U.S. Lighthouse Society, you mentioned the passport program the society runs that's super popular. You said the program is genius. I'm wondering why you said that.
So we talk about this a lot too. I'm like the collector type where I'm like, oh, I have to have, every time we go and visit somewhere, I have to have a patch, or I have to have a pin or something to commemorate that I've been there. And so for me, this stamp passport program is genius because it just makes me want to go. For example, we have a trip coming up to Cape Cod in August, I believe. And I've based everything we are doing on that trip around collecting stamps. I just can't help it. I just think it's so much fun and it's so special. And you just get to have this little book of all the place, all the lighthouse related things you've been to, and, you know, the life-saving stations. You can go to Coast Guard Museum, and like, we're going to go see Forster or Fresnel lens in a museum, and that counts as a stamp. So it's just so much fun because we get to base our trip around collecting these things, which is totally my thing. It's not really Vince's thing. He has a passport book now, so he's going to join me in our stamp collecting, but you still enjoy it.
Oh, I'm certainly not against it. I did. I had to bring it up though. We're big spreadsheet people, a couple of engineers. Oh, and so we're looking at our trip, and I was like, are we going to be able to make it to, you know, this time at this place?
And I'm packing it in just as many stamps as possible.
It'll be a great adventure.
Yeah.
You'll love it. You'll love Cape Cod, but I will warn you, you probably know this already. August is very much the busy season on Cape Cod.
We know what we're signing up for.
Yeah, you'll love Cape Cod. My niece, Tina, and I, who are running a tour in Maine in October, are going to be working on a Cape Cod tour for next year. So,
great.
You'll be doing your own trip there. But
yeah,
just to give people advance scoop on that, we'll be posting information about that fairly soon. I go way back with Cape Cod, of course, many have been there a zillion times. But if you go to Cape Cod, you're only going to be hour and a half south of where I am. So if you decide to come north at all, you know, give me a shout.
Yeah, we're flying into Boston. So
oh, are you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So maybe we can make it happen.
Yeah.
Do have one day that's not filled with stamps. So
well, I'm an hour north of Boston. Of course, I can't promise a tour of Portsmouth Harbor Light the way things are going lately. But by August, I sure hope things are more or less normal, that I could maybe give you a tour of Portsmouth Harbor Light if you come.
But that'd be amazing.
It's pretty hard to promise at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me ask you something different here, still lighthouse related, but one of the things we're always talking about, this is an endless conversation, we've talked about it on the podcast, I've asked many people about this, we're always talking about how do we get younger people interested in lighthouses. By younger I mean under 65. Seriously, because you know, I'd say it's a minority of people in the who are really involved in lighthouse preservation or writing about lighthouses, anything like that, who are under 65. You know, most of us are a bit over that. So you are younger people. You definitely qualify for that. And I'm wondering if you have any ideas about getting younger people. I guess that could apply to kids or people, you know, people in their 20s, maybe 30s, I would consider. I mean, to me, again, under 65 is young, but I guess I'm thinking of kids and mainly people in their 20s. How do we get people interested?
I don't really know. Like, ours was a circumstance where I was already kind of interested in like the nautical world and stuff like that. And a lot of times when people hear we're doing a lighthouse podcast, it's like, well, what's so special about lighthouses? Or like, why do you like them so much? And it's really just about the history being so interesting and that they go back so far and have so many cool aspects that you just don't hear about unless you live near a lighthouse or maybe if you're traveling or something, you know, but we're in the middle of nowhere. So it's kind of hard to spread the word about it, or most people don't know much about it, just think it's not significant. But
I think I'm researching right now. My next episode I'm covering is on lighthouse tourism. And so, you know, you want to book a trip, you want to see a lighthouse, where do you start? Where's a good place to find information? How do you build an agenda around that? What do you expect when you go to see a lighthouse in the United States? Mm-hmm. Abroad is a whole nother category. But I think that for us, when we're, you know, we didn't grow up, I grew up around here in Kansas. There's no mountains, there's no coast, no lighthouses. So when I'm traveling, I never eat seafood in Kansas, you know, I love it when I travel. And so I'm taking in all of these nautical experiences when I'm able to get to almost any coast. And I think that there's a lot of Americans that have that same experience. And I think that lighthouses are a part of that. And I think what we looked at, like St. Augustine Lighthouse in Florida, is just a incredible website. They're Smithsonian affiliated. I talked with a lady, I can't remember her name at the moment, but in their program, about using some photos. And she was not only kind, but also welcoming, like, you know, tell us more about what you're doing and all these events they had upcoming. And so in that community, I think locally, they have really built a really good program. And I expect they get a lot of traffic and support because of the huge program that they have built. Mm-hmm. I think it's easy for me to say the third leg, I guess, of what I would think is important would be local involvement and service opportunities and volunteering opportunities. It's easy to say that I don't have the opportunity here, but it would be wonderful to volunteer if it was seen in young people's lives. And I don't think it currently is very common as part of your personal pride in taking care of your community. A lighthouse is a wonderful example. Almost all of them we've ever heard about, read about, have seen, have been wonderful examples of something to preserve locally that's important, not only in history, but in modern culture, being involved mm-hmm. with the community, being involved with other people, getting away from your television, doing something that's real and important. So that's some broad strokes, but I think community and tourism are kind of the first two I would start with. And then media, which is what we're doing, is kind of the third, entertainment.
That's what I was going to say, is like with St. Augustine Lighthouse, they don't do just lighthouse tours or something, you know, to bring people to come and check out the lighthouse. It's a little harder because, like, the people ask me, like, what's so special about a lighthouse that makes you want to do a whole podcast around it? And to get people in that don't automatically think like, oh, this is the coolest thing ever, like we do, it's coordinating events that bring the lighthouse into it, but maybe isn't the main focus, so that people, you know, will at least get their foot in the door. Kind of like St. Augustine around Christmas time has like a scavenger hunt of Christmas trees, where there's like 20 Christmas trees and you go and you find them all. One of them's inside the lighthouse and it's really amazing, super tall, like everything's lit up really cool. And it just kind of pulls the lighthouse in to this event where people who don't really know anything about lighthouses would still end up there.
Yeah. Well, both of you are making a lot of really good points. And St. Augustine is one of the best managed lighthouses in the country, I would say, as far as involvement in the community, as you said, and just really developing it as a tourism resource. Their website, as you said, is great. So they're a really good example that I think a lot of us can learn a lot from. But I'll tell you that in the U.S. Lighthouse Society in the last few years, there's been a lot of talk of how do we use social media better to attract young people. But I think we've kind of gotten away from that because that didn't work. We'd post a lot on Instagram, and you know, I know most young people don't use Facebook anymore. Facebook is a good way for us to get the word out to our public. You're kind of preaching to the same people all the time, but to about events and things like that. But TikTok, we've barely done anything on. I know that's really popular, but we just found that we weren't reaching new people very much with the social media. So I don't think that was the key for us. Mm-hmm. But I think some of the ideas you were just talking about, Vince, are very central to the whole thing. I always feel that if you bring somebody to a lighthouse, how can they not fall in love with it, with the experience? And that, you know, it includes kids. I mean, I've given a lot of tours for school groups at Portsmouth Harbor Light. The kids I love talking to most are probably about third or fourth grade, and they are so thrilled to be there. Once they get up into junior high and high school, they, you know, they don't want to be, they act like they're thrilled about anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're kind of aloof, but the younger kids are so into it. And I've got this this girl, 11-year-old Guinevere Porter, who's in Kentucky, who she and her mom are regular listeners to the podcast. And now she co-hosted an episode with me recently.
All right.
And she's fantastic, you know. So yeah. I try to encourage that as much as possible when somebody shows the interest. Some really, really good thoughts there. But it's an ongoing conversation for sure. Let me ask you a very big general question. Maybe we should have started with this, but why do you think people love lighthouses so much?
Well, something we noticed, especially when we were talking about how nice people are in the Outer Banks and everything, part of what we loved so much is that people really base their community around the lighthouses there because it's such a huge part of their lives. And, you know, it just kind of, the history of it really brings people together, especially locally, you know, like we just love that about it.
Yeah, we were surprised. Obviously, we were on vacation. I don't think the Outer Banks is a huge location for people to vacation to from far away, from, you know, further than nearby. So I think that we were kind of the foreigners, and we met a lot of people who were either local or from close by cities. And I think that it was interesting to me, their attitude around the lighthouses, and that, like Emily said, the communities were really, they're not based on lighthouse culture, but it was evident everywhere. Yeah, I mean,
they were proud.
They're very proud. And I think the program managers, everybody who's involved, the volunteers in the communities who are just running businesses for us tourists, they're all aware of how important the lighthouses are in those communities. And I think it's probably similar in any community that has a lighthouse. Everyone we talk to that we interview, of course, we're already talking lighthouses, so it's a good place to start. But they all share stories about how the lighthouse is not only important in history, but also today. And of course, preservation's at the foremost effort. So, I was very surprised by that on our trip.
Yeah,
I'd love to see more of it.
There was one instance where Vince and I didn't have a place to stay because our motel kind of failed us. And we were like, well, we'll just go out to dinner. We went at like 9 p.m. somewhere and we're just eating. And this couple, this really nice couple, was like, hey, like, if you don't have a place to stay, we'll take you in. And even in their house, their stairs posts were Cape Hatteras Lighthouse. Yep. Like, it's just so funny how the lighthouse has become integral to the culture of like a town like that. So.
Yeah, it's. I think that's especially true for some of the smaller towns where lighthouses, historically and in the present day, tourism-wise and everything else, they're very much centerpieces of the community. Maybe not so true of the bigger cities like, say, Boston or New York or Chicago that have lighthouses. I grew up in the Boston area. Boston Harbor has over 30 islands and has the oldest light station in America, Boston Light, and several other lighthouses as well. But I used to talk to people all the time and said, what, there are islands in the harbor? There's a lighthouse? You know, people are surprised. But once they find out, they're interested.
Yeah.
But it tends to be off their radar a bit in the bigger cities. Mm-hmm. You have to kind of reach out to them.
Yeah. Hard for me to understand. I have a friend. She just moved here to Kansas City from San Francisco. And I said, did you ever go to East Brother Light? She's like, what are you talking about? Oh,
you missed out.
You got to go back.
She probably went to Alcatraz and toured the prison at Alcatraz. And there's a lighthouse there, of course.
Yes.
Part of the complex there. But I'll bet if you asked her, did you know there's a lighthouse at Alcatraz? She might not have really noticed, you know, because I think.
Great community. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I remember one time I was with my brother and we went to New Bedford, Mass, which is southeastern Mass, you know, south of Cape Cod. And there's a few lighthouses around there. And I was pointing out like a spark plug type lighthouse, Butler Flats, out in the harbor there. There were some kids fishing right near us. And they said, what are you looking at? And I said, the lighthouse right there. And it was like a couple hundred feet in front of them. And they said, that's a lighthouse? You know, and then they were interested. So I told them a little bit about it. So hopefully I hooked a couple of, you know, future lighthouse buffs.
Probably so a good fishing spot too.
Yeah, good. Right. Well, lighthouses often are good fishing spots as well. So I have one final question for you, okay, for bonus points.
Oh, yeah. Right?
Yeah. And that question is, why should people listen to your podcast, Lighthouse Lowdown, my podcast, Lighthearted, and also the Association of Lighthouse Keepers podcast, Keeping Watch? Why should people listen to all those?
Well, I can't speak for Keeping Watch. We haven't heard that one yet. But for ours, I think it's very valuable for when you're about to go visit a lighthouse, or you just heard about one, or you lived near one and you just want to hear the history about it, kind of catch up and see like what you can do there, what's around it, stuff like that. Like, we just cover pretty surface level things for the average Joe that wants to go and check it out. And I think Lighthearted goes really well into depth about current events and like doing interviews and branching out from what we focus on is just like a lighthouse somewhere. You guys will cover, I mean, books and tours and like all kinds of things like tangents that connect to lighthouses. And so it's a more in-depth and more broad kind of coverage, whereas ours is more for people that maybe are going to visit or are interested in hearing about one specific lighthouse. They can come see if we've covered it.
Anything you want to add, Vince?
Yeah.
Well, for Lighthearted, I've listened to a couple episodes and I'm blown away by the amount of effort you must put in, because it's such a wide breadth and depth. And putting out content all the time. You're also volunteering. You're also interviewing people like us, having our short episodes over here. So Lighthearted is highly recommended by us. And it's a very different experience, more intellectual probably, but
I don't know if I'd say that.
So we're honestly just happy to be a part of the community. This isn't, you know, we're not making money. We're not going to get famous, but we're learning and having fun, and we meet like it's a business, and we talk about, hey, are we still having fun? And, you know, if we're ever not, then we won't continue, but we've had that conversation many times and it's just a blast. It's great to be a part of it.
Yeah. Well, thank you for saying that about my podcast. I appreciate that very much. But, you know, I've been saying that for a long time. If it's not fun, I wouldn't do it anymore, but I've been doing it for almost 40 years now. So you know, there's always fun to be had related to lighthouses of all kinds, mm-hmm. whether it's traveling or talking about them or whatever it may be. So I'm having a blast. And every week I do it, I learn so much. It's the people I interview who make it so great. So like you guys. So, but you know, I love the fact that yours is so conversational, and I think more so than with my podcast, people get to know you almost like, getting to know you as friends and et cetera. And as you said, experiencing all of it with you, learning about lighthouses and kind of going on this journey with you. So you guys do a great job. Okay, Emily and Vince, I'm going to ask you to help me out with the close of the podcast, which I usually do with a co-host. So you are going to play the role of the joint co-hosts here. So, all right. Here we go. Let's give it a shot here. So to all our regular listeners and our new ones, thank you so much for listening, and
keep a good light. Let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine.